everybody. Welcome back. It's The Fetch, Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. Again, on now, what is it, March the 24th, everybody. Boy, is time just flying by. We are already into spring. Our tour of duty, as we like to say here in Riyadh, is about ready to end. I think we got another month and a half to go, or a little bit less, about a month and a half to go. So we're really happy when we can arrange things for you from Riyadh. And indeed, we do have something today very special. Ms. Lady Renouf, she's got a video out called Jailing Opinions, a DVD from Telling Films. Again, she's a human rights activist. She's been really advocating a lot for historical truth for quite some time. You might see her in the revisionist community a little bit, although that's kind of a, perhaps she should teach me a little about the legalities of that, since she's closer to that in ground zero within the German area. But nonetheless, she's joining us here. Last time she was here was February the 25th of 2017, so a little bit over a year ago, and it's great to have her back. Hi, Miss Lady Michelle, how are you?
I'm very well and very happy to be speaking to you again, Dennis, and hello to your listeners.
Yeah, thanks for coming back. It's got a great show. As you know, Michael Tom Goodrich is going to be here after you, so it's got a great lineup today, and we promoted it a bit, so we've already got, as you can imagine, some trolls from the probably from Tel Aviv, for all we know, have already been invading us a little bit. We've had to do some house cleaning already, as you can imagine. So tell us, what have you been up to since, I guess, you were last on? And we want to get into your Dresden event a little bit soon, but what have you been up to? Are things going well with you? Or everything's kind of fine right now?
Well, everything's slightly in abeyance. Anything can happen, Dennis. Considering the 10-minute remarks that I made one Saturday afternoon may have landed me in prison or heavy fines or heaven knows what. So when people think that they are living in a democracy where they can state pleasant, reasonably made comments about something, heaven knows where it will lead them. Because I happen to know for the first time, actually, I went to Dresden to do with the commemoration of the what is absolutely a Holocaust that happened on that city and 60 other German towns and cities during the 1940s. Mm-hmm. And it was the first time that I'd been to participate turn up. I wasn't invited to speak. I don't speak German. But a comrade of mine, Richard Edmonds, he does speak German. He's English. And he was scheduled to speak. And so on this particular weekend, I had the chance. I was free. So I thought, well, I'll go along and support Richard. And I will do what I always felt that I should do, which is why I made my Dresden Holocaust, An Apology to Germany is Due, on DVD in 2012. I felt it was perhaps time that I actually did go and join the memorial. Mm. So that's what took me there.
Have you been surprised at the speed at which we see various political groups out there? We can kind of name them if we like, we do anyways. But the way in which our speech has been targeted for censorship, I mean, not just in Germany, but the UK, France, you know, pretty much the West. Are you surprised at the audacity at which they are going after free speech nowadays?
Well, there seems to be something afoot, I think, Dennis. There is something odd going, something in the air, something specific in the air. I don't know what it is. We'll find out soon enough, I think. But you've seen recently where people are being banned now from entering countries.
This is amazing.
You see, the Canadian Lauren Southern and the American Brittany Pettibone
and her boyfriend.
Yes. Now, I mean, for me, they are limited in their perspective of what the game is. But they're doing a good job in as much as they do. But I myself personally don't agree with their particular concentration on attacking Islam. I would say, so long as we are pointing and shouting at the targets put in front of us to distract and keep us from falling in line with defense of the latest in our depravity culture that we are now having in the West, the powers that should not be are rolling on unimpeded to cover the planet in what Michael Hoffman described as the Jewish cement. So, of course, this all has been represented so well in Orwell's book, 1984. Here we are. You want to shout hate at this. And, of course, then you have to shout hate at people who don't want six or seven different genders now as absurd. And the idea that there aren't any races, we're all imagining that we've got different races because we're really all from Africa. And all these absurd ideas that people are somehow being so postmodern orientated to be willing to accept anything that seems to have some sort of big wave of influence behind it. Which means people feel, well, if all these people think this, there must be something right in it. And this is the postmodernist sort of influence in us. And now I don't know what much protest there have been, but the idea that these two young women, who are clearly very innocent looking young women, have been banned from the UK. Because they want
to find that so shocking, by the way, that nation is banning people because they are afraid of what they have to say.
Yes.
Yet you have a massive immigration side with Telford and other parts with the grooming gangs that have been going on for years and years. And they're looking the other way. It's just, what is UK intelligence? What is the UK security apparatus really doing? What are they doing?
They're obeying. They are simply obeying. They are obeying the powers that should not be, because it simply comes down to the fact that you can't get people to listen whose livelihood depends upon their not listening. It's just that simple. And so the politicians know they're not going to get it, keep their jobs, and they certainly don't, if they in any which way wish to make the obvious known. They simply lose their job. So those who are only interested in their job and not interested in anything other will collude with this, these things. I mean, we speak of this business now. These two young women wanted to speak at London's Marble Arch Speaker's Corner. That is the traditional place where you can come and say what you think. They were banned from coming to do that. They weren't banned because they were wanting to do something nefarious. I mean, they were going to do something openly. They were going to use their democratic right, as since Canada and America, as opposed to be our special friends in America, here they are banned. Our special friends are banned. These poor young girls are banned from our country. It's just beggar's belief. And really, as for Tommy Robinson, one of the people that they were going to interview. Now, you see, I've watched Tommy Robinson. I've never met him. I've watched him describing how he's been treated. It seems to me that he's a good man. That's my impression. But and what he says to a certain extent is sensible. But he's limited again and doing exactly the same as I've just described, where he's aiming at what's put up in front of us, which is the Muslim thing, instead of who is responsible for inculcating this mass migration. Who's responsible for creating the wars that have created the real refugees, yes, let alone the mass migrating of economic migrants, which Colonel Gaddafi, the late great Colonel Gaddafi, in my view, warned us, if we don't help him keep those people in Africa, then Europe will turn black.
You know, here's something I don't understand, and perhaps you can just give a little perspective Perhaps not, but let's see. Lauren Southern, who I think was just recently banned, she's really now known to be Lauren Simonson. She's actually a Zionist.
Well, these
behind the scenes. And then Tommy Robinson is so much aligned with the Israeli front equally, yet they're presented as the opposition to us. I'm kind of confused what the strategy is of the ruling elites now with you know, parading these people in front of us. They're all anti-Islam. Of course, as you say, they don't raise the issue of the Jewish machinations behind the scenes, yet they seem to be equally going after their own targeted, you know, their own, not targeted, but their own opposition, their own personal opposition. It's like this is all just one controlled theater.
Yes. Well, in the case of Tommy Robinson, I still hold out hope for that man's character, because I feel that he's got a decent character when I watch him on the video. That's, you know, I don't get the sense that I quite sometimes do when I'm watching something, and I really think there's a sort of and the echo that they're now using to define the powers that should not be's operatives. And I don't get that feeling with Tommy Robinson. I feel he's a young man who has not had the benefit of the background of nationalism in Britain. He doesn't know the enemy. He doesn't have the background. He doesn't know. Mm. He's been groomed by our powers that should not be, and he's not had anybody around him to show him the depth of what's going on. I think he needs to be, I would love to speak to that man. I think he'd be worth speaking to, because mm-hmm. he's...
Think he's genuine, he's just naive.
I just feel that he's our kind of a decent man, and he's put through a lot for it. But he's been groomed in an extremely persuasive way that we know these people can do. And they've made, obviously, a lot of the time, our people are responding to the wrong premise. They're responding in a sort of a right way, but to the wrong premise. They don't know that the premise is totally, totally fraudulent. And so, in consequence, they want to be nice, they want to be this, they want to be welcoming, they want to be this or that. They don't understand what is truly at bottom of these things. And Tommy Robinson going after the Muslims, he's ignoring the humanitarian necessity to recognize what our governments, the operatives of the New World Order, there's no question about that, are causing wars on people who haven't done us any harm, who've been lied about. I mean, governments now, we know, lie to their citizens. The WMD lie of the Iraqis having, imminent, you know, that huge lie that all of these governments were willing to collude in telling us, and we all know this now. We need to care about the fact that we have, because we seem to be in a democracy, which means we've elected this sort of stuff, which we don't actually have any option, because there's no democratic right if all of the political parties are all pro-Zionist. That is not a choice. So here these people are who are supposed to be not in a democracy in Iraq, et cetera, et cetera. No wonder they hate us, because they believe that we, each one of the citizens, are be responsible for our governments bombing, a phosphorus bombing, and attacking all of these civilians. And that's why it started in Dresden, you see. That's the relevance of my speech about Dresden. There was this phosphorus carpet bombing. They were targeting civilians in Dresden, targeting only the British. That's what I said in my 10-minute impromptu speech there. Perhaps I should start a little bit from the beginning, Dennis. Why I spoke when I said that I wasn't a speaker. When some of the people before it started recognized that I was in the audience, as it were, they all cheered when somebody said, oh, it's Lady Renouf is here. And then the organizer said, well, you know, people want you to speak. And I said to him, well, do you know, this lady here has just said, a German lady, you English have no right to be here. And he said, oh, never mind her. I said, no, I respect what she said and why she said it. And if you'd like me to speak impromptu, I would like to address it to her. And so I, as it happened, because Richard was going to speak himself, he happened to have the DVD in his hand, which we had made. He was one of the narrators of my script in my film. And so I happened to have that in my hand when I'd said to the woman, look, we have at least tried to make an apology in form of a DVD, which she just sort of, you know, didn't understand. So I had the back cover of it, of my own DVD, in my hand where I could read what the chief of the Air Ministry had said, that they intend, it's in the archive, it's in our British documents of the wartime period, that the intention of the British, the policymakers, not the people, the policymakers, was to, first of all, goad Adolf Hitler to bombing Britain because he didn't want to, and secondly, that they, in the bombing strategy campaign, that they intended to burn alive 900,000 Dresden civilians. Civilians, they're targeting civilians. That is a war crime. No soldier is allowed to target a civilian. But these bombing raids, these enormous bombing raids, were intent, aiming at targeting civilians. And also, they were aiming at targeting, as per Professor Lindemann of a very dubious background, had said, we aim to bomb the areas for the working class people because they have smaller gardens, they're closer together, there's more of them, we can destroy more of the civilians. And because they got away, the Allies got away at the Nuremberg fake trials in 1946, got away with any international condemnation of this war crime in targeting civilians, that all the wars that have been for Israel ultimately ever since have targeted civilians. And that's what I wanted to say, that to this lady, this German woman, that the British can tell you something useful that you are not aware of, that's important for us to tell you. And furthermore, in the bigger picture, it's important to see what Dresden represents, the Dresden Holocaust, the burning alive. A Holocaust is a burning alive. It's not mass shootings or some other thing. It's burning alive. It's a religious term.
Burnt offering. That's correct.
And so the people were made into human torches. Where we stood in that area near the Frauenkirche, right in the center where this rally was this morning for the commemoration of the Dresden Holocaust, their kinsfolk, no wonder they felt, this woman felt, here the British are standing on our sacred, they are desecrating our ground, is what she must have felt. And I felt sympathy for her. I understood. I wasn't offended, anything but, because 73 years ago, her kinsfolk, mainly women, children, orphans, and refugees, which are bombing policymakers said was a bonus to get these thousands of refugees fleeing into Dresden for safety, because Dresden, they'd fled there because Dresden was not a military target. It was a cultural target.
And it was declared an open city. Everybody,
yes, that's right. Exactly.
Half common sense understands Dresden was declared an open city by the German government. There was no industry there. It was purely a cultural city.
Absolutely. And a beautiful city.
Zero strategic value.
Yeah. Oh, but strategic from the point of view that it was destroying from the banking peoples who made the thing possible. I mean, as Chaim Weizmann, the head of the Jewish organization at the time, world Jewish organization at the time, he said that we are financing this war. We are the financiers of this war. But what I wanted to say is that on the very spot that we were standing, the temperatures of those bombs was so powerful that the ground was melting in, so that the feet of the people were melted into the ground. They couldn't move whilst they were being burnt alive with phosphorus bombs, which, as the Palestinians know, once it starts burning the skin, there's no way you can stop it from burning. It's not extinguishable. So that no wonder anyone who really knows what happened and appreciates what happened to the Germans there, then they're not allowed to say so. They're not allowed to mourn their dead. They're frightened to come. The ordinary citizens of Dresden are too frightened to come onto the street to join us for fear of all the police photographing them. They might be called, you know, neo-Nazis or whatever it is. Thank goodness that one thing that President Trump has done, one thing, is that he has pointed to the Antifa who was screaming and trying to drown us down. Imagine screaming and trying to drown down people who are trying to mourn their dead. I mean, how obscene does that do? And at least Trump has identified the Antifa as a terrorist organization. That is one thing.
This speech that wasn't a planned speech. You're clear here, it was an impromptu speech. This gathering was brought about by German nationalists, those who are patriots or nationalists. How big was the gathering and how strong is the German nationalist movement at the moment?
Well, there were 300 people there. Now, just let me just find you the detail that I saw about that. Let me just see. Not sure if I can find it now. It's so easily. But let me just say that Alfred Schaefer, and I'd like to talk about his sister in due course, if I may. But just at the moment, I speak about Alfred Schaefer. He was one of the speakers. Now, I was worried when I was arrested, and the whole thing was closed down.
And I was taken into custody there?
Yeah, I was
for 5 hours. That's correct.
I was arrested for Volksverhetzung, is what they call it, populist incitement. And I was detained, I'll speak of that later, just concentrating on my saying to the police there, look, I was an impromptu speaker. Please allow the memorial to go ahead as they had planned it. Don't close it down. I take full responsibility for what I spoke, my utterances fully, but please don't punish the others who have a right to speak. Of course, I made no impact in that way, but I was glad and relieved when the comrades who didn't have chance to speak, there was no question of their feeling resentment toward me because they didn't have, on the contrary, of course, the organizer, who wasn't able to speak, Gerhard Ittner, as the organizer, wasn't allowed to speak before. It was already established that he wasn't allowed to speak.
We'll be right back, everybody, right after this. Okay, everybody, welcome back. We are again, it's the Fetch Inside the Eye, live intelligent media for the politically aware. We are having a little bit of issues with the studio feed at the moment. We are unable to hear the breaks coming from the studio, so that's going to impact going into and out of breaks, everybody. But nonetheless, we are fine live. So anyways, that should be fine. Again, joining us today, Lady Michelle Renouf, again, she is speaking about the issues out of Dresden when she did her impromptu speech at Dresden. We'll get some Monica Schaefer here from Ms. Lady Michelle equally. Lady Michelle, first, welcome back.
Oh, thank you. Where did we get to, actually, in terms of our listeners?
Yeah, I'm going in the chat room. Here's what I think we need to draw back on, and it is the benefits about Alfred Schaefer and the talking about how it was actually good for you to actually have done the impromptu speech because the story went viral.
Okay, so let me then, I've just found that in the break, I've just found what he actually said in an people. You see, not just the 300 that happened to stand there with us on the day, is what he's saying. And then he continues, she, meaning me, had said all the important stuff. She said it. And that was why they got so riled up. And now they just amplified the message around the world by shutting her down. So that was good work on their part. He means the powers that should not be. Having it shut down with her at the microphone, that is what we really needed to get this message out there. So it was worth it, he's saying, because he didn't get his chance to speak. Just having been there was worth every penny, I'll tell you. There's nothing I could have said that would have been as fitting and as proper as what Lady Michelle Renouf said. End of his quote. Now, I'm very touched when he's saying such a thing, that he would happily forego his own speech. But it's the positive nature of this man is marvelous.
I've heard that, actually. I've never had him on the show here, and that he's actually become the most requested guest now. I'm always asking people, who would you like to hear to come on the show? And he is bumped up now to the number one requested guest.
I just thinking of him, because I don't want us to miss the chance, because it's terribly important to speak about his sister.
Yeah, Monica Schaefer. We have that story running, but as we all know, everybody, Monica's been in jail now. She can be held for 6 months. A Canadian citizen visiting a court inside of Germany, jailed. Perhaps under the direction of B'nai B'rith of Canada, still there. So I guess now, Lady, you can give us an update.
Well, it's just that I saw how Alfred had. I mean, it's truly wicked to take the sister and punish the sister. You know, it's this business of punishing people's relatives. To punish the rest of the family. And that's what happened with Tommy Robinson too, by the way. So the account that Alfred recently, I don't know that you're aware of it, perhaps the listeners are, but it's worth reiterating that he gives an example of the mental cruelty that's involved in this. Because he said, yesterday my wife visited Monica in the prison in Munich. Here is a short story of torture by pinpricks. Monica was up for review to allow her to stay at home until she was put on trial. The judge stated, yes, let her go to wait for a trial without passport, etc. She was told that after the decision will be made, she will not be able to return to her cell. She's in a high maximum security cell, by the way. I mean, this woman.
Sir, I mean, that's like the most non-violent, polite woman you can meet.
I have, Dennis, I've met this woman only once. She came with her brother here at my winter solstice. Personally, I've met this woman. She's a frail, dainty, charming, sweet person. The concept that she's in a maximum security prison, I mean, truly. And for what has she said? I mean, it'd be all very well that she's dainty.
She didn't even say anything inside of Germany.
She hasn't said anything vicious to make her anything other than a totally upright and decent human being. So to continue with what Alfred has said, she was told that she'd have to take all of her things with her because she wouldn't be going back to her cell. She should take everything down and pack it up. She took her 20 pictures from the wall. She's only allowed to have 20 postcards up on the wall, you know. I actually sent her a packet of stamp address postcards, thinking this would be very handy for her, but she's not allowed to have blank postcards, apparently, in her cell. So my idea that she would not have to worry about stamps and so on, she's not allowed to have blank ones, let alone more than 20 that have been sent to her. So she'd taken them down from the wall, and I'm going back into Alfred's quote, and gave the stuff she could buy every 2 weeks in the prison store to the other cellmates. So she'd given away all of her fruit and all the rest of it. She was so sure that she would be let out, as that was the message she got from the judge. Then the state prosecutor, who is one of those particular types of the powers that should not be, said no, niet. The communist commissar, as it were, did not approve. Then she went back to her empty cell without all of the things that she'd had, that she'd given away generously to everybody else, to think about that. Monica was very sad. And then he said, "This system will smother and kill us all if we do not stop it. They amuse themselves with our condition of resembling drugged roaches in a bottle." And I just thought that was very apropos. And here is this wonderful girl giving a strong impression that she's standing upright. She's struggling in the gulag to keep herself in good spirits and so on. And because she has been saying that in her letters home, they have wanted to break that spirit of hers, which is a totally decent human spirit that you wouldn't want to break, whatever you think of her opinion. And this is the trick that they pulled to make sure that she is reduced in her own spirits for being able to sustain herself in the situation of imprisonment, for expressing a simple, benign, well-meant opinion on a video that happened to be made when she was on German soil. And that was how they could come to arrest her when she was again in Germany.
So that's how, in other words, that video was made while she was in Germany?
She made the film with her brother in Germany. And that was how...
That's the reason why they're charging a Canadian...
And that was a couple of years ago or something. That wasn't even recently.
Years ago. It's almost 6 to 8 years ago now.
She came, I think a couple of years ago. She came at Christmas time to visit her brother. That's how come she happened to visit me as well for the first time. I'd ever met her. And then she went to Bavaria where her brother lives. She didn't make any videos there. She didn't do anything there. All she did was a perfectly reasonable thing. She went with her brother to Munich, because Munich is not far, it's in Bavaria. So she went there to Sylvia Stoltz, the German attorney, who was in prison for 3.5 years. And I witnessed this because I've been recording these revisionist trials, because once I realized that there is no transcript of these trials, there's no record of what these people have ever said or what they are trying to get their clients. That the attorneys like Sylvia Stoltz have tried to get the judges to allow them to present the evidence in support of their client's case in the normal way throughout the entire world. But in Germany, the law is such that if an attorney tries to do that, that attorney is breaking the law and therefore is prosecutable for doing this. And so the judge in Mannheim actually said to her that she is defending her revisionist client, quote, too well, unquote, and in consequence, she is going to be prosecuted, and was. I mean, the world needs to know that. I mean, if you're an axe murderer, your attorney is supposed to defend you as well as that attorney can. But none of these revisionists, none of them, have ever been violent. They are academics or scientists. The concept is insane. And she, what Monica and Alfred had gone along to attend the new trial of the attorney Sylvia Stoltz, because this trial is about her speaking 2 years ago in Switzerland, where she was invited to a very big event. It's a frequent event called the anti anti-censorship conference. And what Sylvia Stoltz was doing was telling them about her experience. She was telling them about how she'd been imprisoned and so on. And she was in Switzerland, in another country. But the authorities, wish of the powers that should not be, should have said that she has committed another crime, not in Germany even. She's committed another thought crime, apparently. And now she was up before the judges, and Monica and her brother simply were sitting in the audience attending the trial. They weren't participating. They were just sitting there like anybody else would be. And in then there was a special interval announced, and to make a big drama of it. And Monica was arrested and snatched from sitting there in the audience and taken to a maximum security prison in Munich, where she's been there now since the 3rd of January.
Now, I understand their laws allow her to be held for 6 months. Is that what you understand?
Well, I couldn't possibly comment on any of that. I can only comment on what I know to have happened to her via the reports of her brother. I'm not au fait with I suppose I'm going to become very au fait with German law anytime soon, Dennis.
How much pushback? Do you hear any pushback from German patriots saying enough is enough? I mean, because in many respects, Germany is appearing to be such a Bolshevik Jewish monstrosity with these types of... This is like, as you say, the gulags of the 1940s and the 1950s. It's like you can't even speak. And Germany is such a rich country with such a wonderful history. Is there any pushback from the German nationalists to say enough is enough?
Well, I mean, I would sort of say that it goes further back, you know, with the Bolsheviks, because, you know, my late father-in-law, he descends from a Russian nobility, and in this particular instance, his ancestor was a White Army general, General Count Gryaznov. And he fled with, he blew up the port of Odessa in the Russian Revolution against the Bolsheviks, and fled into Persia with his troops and had to change his name in order to survive. But my father-in-law, the relative of this man, said that he believed that the Bolshevik communist was a flash in the pan, and eventually they, you know, truth would be restored to Russia. Well, in his day, it was. And it's the irony of ironies is that now the only news that we can get about what's going on for this grooming, this terrible grooming of these people and the atrocities that we're there, it's only on RT, Russia Today, that we can hear anything, or via Putin's remarks. So it's now Russia who's telling the West, who is now a Stasi surveillanced state, that the roles have been reversed, And now it's Russia that we can somewhat depend upon for truth and accuracy, whereas we in the rest are completely duped. And we only hear one side, the powers that should not be's side, and there's no democracy in this syndicated monopoly of the press, the schooling, because I'm always wishing to try to make clear to any listener about the Stockholm 2000, which is still active, about the teaching guidelines for teaching about what is called the Holocaust. And it states on page 11 in this guideline that, and I'm quoting, care must be taken not to give a platform for what they call deniers, i.e. revisionists, who should have a right without exception to be heard, and returning to the quote, nor seek to disprove the so-called deniers' position through, and listen to this, Dennis, normal historical debate and rational argument, end quote. So that is how teachers internationally are told and instructed to teach history in relation to World War I and II and what is called the Holocaust. You are not allowed to teach it in relation to normal debate and rational argument. This is forbidden. You must treat it as a religion with a heresy attitude, as is as experienced by Monica Schaefer, and put into prison. She's been put into prison because she is committed a heresy. She has said that what she thought her mother had been told, now she realizes is highly debatable, but no one is allowed to debate it for fear of being called an heretic and being thrown, as she has been, into prison. She's proved the case of her DVD, her video. She's proved it. They have proved it for her because they've put her in prison as a heretic.
I appear to see, I'm not going to state because I'm not there, but from the Polish government, we see a little bit of nuanced pushback.
Yes.
We don't see too much pushback from the Russians. They speak about the atrocities of Bolshevism, but they want to protect the historical side of the Holocaust.
Well, I think what they have to do, you see, I think, Dennis, it's rather like what our Queen has done in inaugurating this Bomber Command's monument, this massive monument on Hyde Park in London to commemorate the valour of these people. Well, we're not criticising the valour, but the concept of the terror bombing on civilians is moral bombing, which is what they're calling it. There's an exhibition in Dresden as well, which actually depicts the Dresden atrocity as moral bombing. I don't know where we were going from there. I'm an open book with too many footnotes. There's so many comments to make. I forget now where I was going with that. But
there was going back to the Holocaust, not the Holocaust, but the Dresden issue, because that's kind of like the hottest news. You got, as you said, a lot of international play. I saw you in like the Dayer. As if somehow we're supposed to accept Jewish history as writ of fact. It's exceedingly egregious, as Jewish people would tell us. They're saying like you're under investigation, but you got kind of like good play in Sputnik in Russia.
Oh yes, we were talking about Russia, weren't we? Yes. Now that's coming back. That's what it's coming back to me now. You see, our British, because we've got to keep our finest hour. Nonsense. Now wartime. It's the same for Putin, you see. His people, they have to keep their finest hour, as it were. They can't be seen to, he can't be seen, as it apparently, unfortunately, to say what the Red Army under this terrible Bolshevik leadership. acted badly. I mean, when you get on Goodrich, he's certainly going to be able to speak about that. But just sticking to this issue at the moment, it's the same situation is the case, that the finest hour of the British are doing this wicked stuff, and they've got to be defended by them because they can't allow the people to realize that they died in vain. They died worse than in vain. But and it's the same for the Russians. While that generation is still alive, who suffered in it and have believed that they did it for their finest hour, it's the same for the Soviet, the Russians of today. It's difficult for Putin to say to them, you died in vain, the Soviet Red Army, you see. And there is where he's hamstrung. He can't, because it's in the release of those Soviet documents that the revisionists have had so many victories in proving their case, because it was the Soviet documents, when they were released, which proved that the 4 million that they had claimed, and therefore the plaques at Auschwitz, blessed by Pope John Paul, claimed 4 million people died there. When these plaques were quietly removed, once the propaganda of the Soviets' admission of propaganda was revealed, then those plaques were quietly replaced by 1 million. But if 6 million minus three must equal six. And it's not good. It's no good saying, oh, well, it's still 1 million. It's not the issue. Exactitude is the issue. Exactitude, which is what revisionist is, a method. It's not an ideology. They aim to find out things, not promote anything, find out. And the Soviet release of the Soviet papers, which was done by Putin's government, has revealed the truth. So it's not as if they're not revealing the truth, the present Russians. It's they are hamstrung in not being able to fully go there, as it were.
Michelle, we are virtually out of time. We're going to have to just get you back. That was a fascinating past hour. Real quick, how do people reach out and find your work?
Look at my campaign website, www.jewishrepublic.com. That is the first Jewish homeland option. We don't need to have this piracy of Palestine. That is not the first homeland. The first homeland is called Birobidzhan. It's on the southeast border in Russia, which was given to them by Stalin. And that's my campaign website.
And Lady Michelle, thanks for coming back. We should probably have you on more often, but thanks so much.
I'm grateful to you, Dennis. Thank you very much.
Thanks again, and good luck and stay safe out there.
Thank you.